The United Nations General Assembly is expected to be dominated by conversations about the continuing conflict in Syria. But away from the headlines, a great deal of work will also be going into moving forward the process to renew the Millennium Development Goals. Over the last decade, the MDGs have provided much of the architecture of international development efforts. They are credited with helping to drive a period of unprecedented progress in poverty reduction through focusing the efforts of aid donors and country governments on a concrete set of targets. There is much to be admired in what has been achieved so far, but 2015 marks the expiry date of the current goals. UK Prime Minister David Cameron co-chaired a panel of politicians tasked with scoping out the room for improvement when it comes to striking a new deal, commonly known as a post-2015 agreement. The General Assembly marks the beginning of the end of a long period of consultation, which has involved gathering submissions from across the world. One of the most innovative elements of this has been the My World Survey. A UN-backed survey with partners including ODI and Ipsos Mori captures the priorities of people across the world. It's now received over 1 million votes. I spoke to Paul Ladd of the United Nations Development Programme to find out a bit more about what the consultations, which go far beyond My World, have revealed. I began by asking him to summarise the findings so far.
I think there are three main messages that we've picked up in our report on the consultations. The first one is that, and this comes out very strongly in the My World survey, there are things in the existing MDG agenda which are still critically important for people all over the world, including poor people in poorer countries, but also people in other countries too. And they're things like education, health, water, food, etc. The second message has been that even on those areas, there are ways in which goals, but also government action, can be improved to make a real difference to people's lives. An example here is on education, where people are focusing much more on the quality of education, what people are leaving schools with. And the third big message has been that people are really calling for a more sophisticated and transformative agenda. They're looking to strengthen some of the environmental components that were in the MDG 7 and in the Millennium Declaration. They're looking for decent jobs, partly, for income, so they can pay for other things, but also for the dignity of employment, so they can look after themselves and their families. They're calling for better governance, to increase their say in the way that governments represent them. And lastly, and somewhat obviously, they want to live in a peaceful world where they're not afraid of being attacked. I don't have personal security concerns that they're not facing a lot of crime.
So should we expect the findings of the consultation to influence the political process?
I always emphasise that at the end of the day, it is going to be governments that are going to be putting together any new agenda for development. But since the consultation started, which was September last year, they've been feeding into the political process on a weekly basis, and that's been part of our job. So they've influenced the findings of the high-level panel report. The report from the scientific community through the SDSN was strongly influenced by the consultations. And when we came to put together the SG's report over the summer, again, we drew significantly on the consultations. So a lot of the inputs already crafted to feed into the political process have already been informed by these 1 million voices. Now, the intergovernmental process is picking up speed through something called an open working group. And for each of those meetings, we, the UN system, put together a 6-page note which captures the main technical issues around each topic they want to discuss. Even in that briefing note, we're putting in the findings of the consultations. We're reflecting on how many people around the world are actually putting this as a priority. So we're even starting to inform the intergovernmental process as well.
It is noticeable that climate change doesn't feature highly in many consultation responses, and yet the United Nations are hoping to bring together the sustainability and poverty reduction efforts, combining the MDGs and the SDGs. Is this likely to be a problem?
Environmental sustainability is one part of the sustainability agenda. The outcome from Rio captures sustainability in many dimensions, economic, social, environmental, and also makes a strong reference to governance and peace and security too. To cut to the chase, for some people who are facing very, very extremely difficult conditions every day, it's more difficult to see the longer term creeping impacts of climate change than it is when you're faced with the challenge of getting enough food, enough water, getting your kids into school, accessing healthcare and things like that. So particularly we've noticed in Africa, climate change comes out towards the bottom of the survey. But if you look at richer countries, we now have an interactive map on our website, and you can pull up a sort of heat map on climate change. And you can see that the richer countries particularly place climate change higher up their agenda. And also countries that are wealthy in natural resources, they also place some of the environmental sustainability components higher up in the survey. So it's interesting when you have a map like that and you can see some of the geopolitical breakdowns of the priorities in the survey.
So if climate will remain a feature of a new agreement, do we know yet where the agenda will be slimmed down? Presumably it's impossible to please everybody.
Not all of the issues that people have raised through the consultations are being reflected in that emerging consensus. I don't think we're going to see, for example, standalone goals on some of the issues which have come out less strongly in the consultations. But there'll be a way of reflecting part of their priorities in it. If I take one example, there's been an incredibly strong engagement from young people around the world. And even some youth groups were calling for a goal which focused exceptionally on young people. Now, I don't think we will see that in the end, but what we hopefully will see is a much better breakdown of data that allows us to track progress for young people on all of the priority areas that are chosen in the end. And that's one way of making sure that we're actually then meeting the needs of young people around the world.
As I mentioned earlier, this week the My World survey topped 1 million votes. ODI's Claire Melamed was involved in creating the survey and has remained closely involved ever since. I asked her how the idea first came about.
We had lots of conversations within the UN system, with our partners Ipsos Mori about how to do it, with all kinds of technology companies and so on. And the idea has exploded. It's amazing how people have taken up, responded with such enthusiasm, the call to get as many votes as possible. So there's a university student in Brazil who's collected hundreds of votes from around his university. There's a website in Egypt that put it on their front page, and we got thousands of votes from Egypt in just a few days. There's people collecting votes from teenage girls in refugee camps in Rwanda. It's absolutely amazing how people have picked this up and made it their own. And it really, it's thanks to those people that we've reached a million votes this week.
So has the breadth of the 2015 consultation helped a clear agenda to emerge?
I'm afraid my answer is yes and no. No, because part of the excitement of the conversation is its breadth and the fact that so many people are enthusiastically engaging in conversations about inequality, about environmental sustainability, about some of the really tough issues that haven't really had a political process through which to think and talk about them. I think that conversation itself is worth having. Some of it will be reflected in the post-2015 goals, and some of it will come out in all kinds of ways that we don't know yet, in national level policy, in the policies of different organisations, companies and so on. Yes, though, because in fact, in my world at least, the results are amazingly consistent. One of the big surprises is we've sat down to look at the data right from the beginning, was how consistent the results are between men and women, between young people and old people, rich and poor countries. Almost everybody puts education at the top. Healthcare comes very high. People really care about their governments, an honest and responsive government also very high. Desire for better job opportunities, not surprisingly, is pretty universal. So there's a diversity. There's also quite a large amount of consensus, at least at the top five or six priorities globally.
And what's been the biggest surprise so far?
One of the things that we're doing in my world is experimenting with different ways of getting information from people. And that's, you know, a lot of technology companies and mobile phone companies have enthusiastically helped us with that. One of the interesting things we're finding is that when we go out and try to collect votes by mobile phone, a vast majority, between sort of 70 and 90% of the votes are coming from men. We don't quite yet know why this is, because when you look at use of mobile phones for banking, for example, proportions of men and women are roughly similar. So it's a bit of a puzzle, but it's a fascinating puzzle, and also one which to me sounds a note of caution about all the enthusiasm around using mobile phones to collect information. Of course we should do that, but we need to keep an eye on things like who's actually responding.